is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Gallagher, girls varsity head coach at Magnificat High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we just got done watching Jordan Poole take a 35-footer with 8 seconds to go on the clock when Golden State was trying to tie it up down three. I'm not sure that was the shot that the Warriors were looking for.
That wasn't what they drew up, Mike.
I mean, I know Steph had to give it up because he was double-teamed there in the corner.
One more
right
swing,
by
right?
Half court,
if you watch, yeah. I mean, the Lakers were intentionally letting Jordan Poole shoot that shot, right? I mean,
well, correct, yeah, absolutely.
So
you definitely want the ball. If you're the Lakers, you definitely want the ball in Jordan Poole's hands. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Great game for AD, 30 points. I got a stat for you. Hold on, let me pull this up here, Mike. I saw this on the old tweeter.
All right.
AD is the second player in NBA history in a playoff game to have 30 plus points, 20 plus rebounds, 5 plus assists, and 3 blocks. Who's the only other player in NBA history?
Akeem.
Too far back.
More recent than that, huh? Duncan?
It is Duncan. Yep.
All right. Yeah, I didn't do too bad.
Two guesses.
Hopefully I can do just as well on the next trivia.
Okay, here you go. Who's the game in these playoffs? There have been four players that have had 20 plus rebounds. Can you name them? He just gave you one of them.
Four players with 20-plus rebounds? Well, Looney has done it multiple times.
Yeah.
So I have Looney. I have Anthony Davis. Mitchell Robinson?
Nope. Come on. Our boy did a 2020 game. LeBron, baby. LeBron did a 2020 game.
Oh, yeah. He had the 22 and 20.
And the guy who choked and is out of the playoffs. Your Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, Giannis. Giannis had 38 and 20 in the final in game, whatever that was, five. Game five. Oof. Well, look, L.A. had this one salted away, and then suddenly the Steph Curry magic got going, and it looked like they were going to blow it. And then that last play, as Curry dribbles it up the right sideline, I know he had to give that ball up. And it went to Poole. And as you said, the Lakers clearly were just more than happy to let Jordan Poole shoot. I think I'd be more than happy to let Jordan Poole shoot at pretty much any point in the game because
it's a little rough right now for Jordan Poole. I know he didn't play horrendously tonight, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, he did go 6 for 11 from three, but I think you still take your chances with Poole taking that shot instead of somehow working its way back to Curry or Thompson.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that's been going on, people are complaining about the free throw disparity, but here's my argument, Mike. I could buy it, okay? I can buy maybe we complain about the free throw disparity, but the difference is the amount of threes that the Warriors shot. They don't attack the basket, Mike. I mean, let's see, how many threes did they shoot tonight? I'll look this real quick. They shot 53 threes. You can't expect to shoot free throws, right? Am I crazy? They took 106 shots and 53 of them were threes.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I think the other part of it is that all throughout the season, the Lakers have been the best team at drawing fouls. And the Warriors, I believe, are at the very back end of the league. They may even be the worst team, maybe the second worst, at drawing fouls. So clearly that's going to be a big advantage for the Lakers throughout the series. I think even regardless of what you want to say about the officiating on a given night, I think just night to night, consistency wise, the Lakers are just going to get to the line more. They have more guys who are more physical inside. LeBron's going to the basket. AD's going to the basket. Whereas the Warriors scoring is all basically perimeter oriented. So you think about Curry and Thompson, even Wiggins spends most of his time playing on the outside as opposed to taking the ball in the basket. So yeah, it looks bad when you say the Lakers are 25 for 29 and the Warriors were, what, 5 for 6?
LeBron is last in the playoffs in three-point percentage. He's first in the playoffs in two-point percentage. That's pretty crazy. The bottom line is this. We recorded the rest of the podcast while the first half of this game was going on, so you'll hear my thoughts at the end of the podcast about what I think this series is going to go. I think the Lakers are winning this series, Mike. I'm more convinced now that second half. I'm more convinced they had a chance to blow this game. They seemingly blew the game, and then they just pulled it together. And I just think they're going to win the series. I'm saying Lakers in six, Mike, still. But yeah, I think it's going to be a good series. I'm enjoying it. And listen, I want the Lakers to win purely because I want to see LeBron beat them in the playoffs again. I just want to – it'll be a fun because that chase – when he did the chase down block, did you not be like, oh, man, that was like game seven? Did you not think that right away, Mike?
He just missed it. Oh, yeah, that was immediate. Just missed that chase down.
Yeah, well, he had another block like the possession before that.
Right, he had the block on Curry, but he didn't get the chase down.
Yeah, you're right. But I was like,
kind of lucky,
oh, man.
Kind of lucky he didn't get a foul.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't.
Kind of lucky he didn't get a foul there.
But still, like, did you not see when you saw him taking off?
Oh, yeah,
that,
immediately.
Immediately, it was like, oh, that's game seven right there. Like, listen, I want LeBron to
exactly.
Beat him. I want them to beat him. I want it. I want it. I know you're not the biggest LeBron fan, but come on, we gotta. It would be so great to see him beat him, especially at this age. Like, I really like it too.
I'm rooting for anybody to beat the Warriors. So if it's LeBron, that's fine. If it's Denver in the next round, that's fine. I'm good with whatever as long as the Warriors get knocked out. So to your point about LeBron's three-point shooting and him being the worst three-point shooter in the playoffs, I think that when you look at what LeBron does and why he does it. Clearly, I think one of the reasons why he takes a lot of threes now is to try to conserve energy and still be able to score. And he just doesn't have the same stamina to be able to go at the basket
500
nonstop
times.
And constantly attack. Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't have that. So you could say, hey, he could be more efficient if he just shot twos and completely eliminated the threes out of his game, which is probably true. But he still has to be a threat, and I think teams still guard him as such. And so even though his percentage is terrible at this point, he's still going to continue to take them. And at some point, he's going to make them. I mean, he's going to make some at least. And just the threat of him being out there still tends to tilt the defense towards LeBron no matter what he's doing. So he's going to continue to shoot him, even though he probably theoretically should just sandbag the whole three-point shooting and just get to the rim. But at age 38, that's probably not just not feasible.
Okay, so Mike, have you changed your opinion? Or are you still taking the Warriors that you said in the future part of this podcast, you said the Warriors to be contradictory? You want to stick with the Warriors, or are you going to switch to the Lakers after watching game one?
I'll still take the Warriors. I think if you look at this series, right, it comes down to the perimeter attack of the Warriors and their ability to shoot threes versus sort of the bully ball style of the Lakers. And look, tonight was a game that could have gone either way. And I think when I look at these two teams, I see two teams that are completely different in terms of their styles, but I see two teams that are pretty evenly matched. I guess the thing that I was thinking about today, sort of as I was mentally preparing for thinking about what we're going to talk about tonight, one of the things that kept coming back to me is me saying that neither the Lakers nor the Warriors are legitimate title contenders. And so I kept trying to toss that around in my head and think about, okay, even when I watch this series and watching game one, do I think that either of these teams can win the NBA title? I know last year, thinking back to a lot of our playoff podcasts, we kept asking the question, like, which of these teams can you trust? And where we are now, I look at the East, and I know we said that we're going to talk a little Knicks and Heat later, but I think those two teams, I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're favorites to win the NBA title, but I definitely think that those two teams, Boston and Philly, Philly's weakened because Embiid, who knows? I don't think he's ever going to be healthy for the rest of this playoffs. And Boston has been just kind of a mess in terms of just really not locked in and doing what they need to do game in and game out. It feels like they're kind of loosey-goosey with what they're doing. And so I could see one of those teams getting beat by either the Knicks or Heat, whoever gets through that series. And then I look at the West and, look, I think Denver's probably going to finish off Phoenix relatively easily, and we'll talk a little bit more about that series later on. But these two teams, I just – man, it's hard to believe that a team that went 9-33 on the road like Golden State did, that they can win a title. Or you look at what the Lakers are.
Mike, I just go back to what I've been saying for the last three months. I cannot say that the Warriors don't have a chance unless they are out.
I think you're wrong.
I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I'm rooting for the Lakers, Mike. I'm rooting for the Lakers. Yeah. So
at this point, I'm kind of conceding, though, that because there's no super teams. Look, Denver has looked the best of any team in the playoffs by far. And what they've done defensively to the Suns these first two games has been really, really impressive. So I think if I'm looking at
– are you sure they're the favorite, the team that's looked the best? I mean, Philly is 5-0.
Right, but Philly's without the reigning NBA MVP right now. And even when that MVP comes back, he's going to be – at less than 100%, and he has a history of not just being below 100% right now in this moment, but it's just as likely that he's going to do something else and get hurt. So I don't know. I think all these teams are flawed, and I think Denver's the best bet. But I guess at this point, if you told me that Golden State or the Lakers went on and won the NBA title, I guess it's not completely – it's not as crazy as I would have thought whenever, 2 weeks ago, a month ago with the Lakers. At any point during the season, I didn't see this coming in any way, shape, or form. And I still think the Nuggets will beat either one of these teams that gets through, but I guess now you got to start to take both of them seriously because one of them is going to be in the Western Conference Finals. So you're looking at one of those two teams being one of the top four teams left in the league. So – at some point, you got to take them seriously.
Yep. I sent you a good tweet from Barstool Sports. It said, it's Jordan Poole time. And when he was jacked up three.
Man, that was rough. Draymond also had a nice blown layup with about 2 minutes to go where he drove down the lane and it was, I don't want to say it was uncontested because I think LeBron was in the area, but that's a layup that guys finish all the time, and Draymond kind of blew that one. So that was right in the midst of their 14-0 run, so it didn't hurt them that much. But they had that one sequence where they got so many rebounds. They had like six offensive rebounds in that possession and then didn't score. That was kind of backbreaking for the Warriors.
I'm sending you another good one. The worst one, Mike, was the video of the when Jason Tatum was being post-game interviewed and the thing fell over on top of him. And it says Jordan Poole for the tie, and it has him. It has Jason Tatum ducking away from the media.
Ducking away from the brick.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Well, did you see Steph's reaction?
No, I didn't see it.
After he took that shot. I mean, I don't know if he's directly or reacting to the fact that Poole took the shot, or he was just reacting to the fact that they were now going to lose the game. But he kind of was waving his arms around and had his head down, and he didn't look too happy with the outcome of that particular situation. If you watch Curry on that play.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can see it or not, or you have it. You're better at scrolling through the phone
here,
but anyway, I don't know. I'm going to go Golden State in seven for right now. I still think that Steph's going to figure out a way to get it done, but if AD can look, if the Lakers get this AD for this entire series, it's going to be really hard for Golden State to win. AD was tremendous tonight, especially on the boards and with his defense blocking shots.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the Lakers.
Anything else?
No.
All right, now that we've talked Lakers Warriors, we're going to turn our attention to our game for the week, Mike, and our game for the week is exactly what hurt the Cavs. Rebounding. Okay, so the top five players in NBA history, NBA and ABA history for total rebounds.
Playoff rebounding. LeBron.
He is number six, Mike.
Not in the top five.
He is 23 from the top five. So probably by the end of this playoffs, he'll be there.
Kareem.
He is number five.
Karl Malone.
I don't even see Karl Malone on this list.
Really?
Oh, no. Karl Malone's seven. Sorry. He's after LeBron. Okay. He's 400 seven. Behind LeBron.
Okay. Huh. Let's see.
Two are new school-ish in my lifetime, and two were pre-my lifetime.
Bill Russell.
Number one.
Wilt.
Number two.
Should have figured that just because of the outrageous rebounding stats that occurred. So I have number one, number two, and number
five and six and seven.
Okay. So I need three and four. So these are guys that are more current.
More current. In my lifetime. Okay.
In your lifetime. Moses?
No. Was Moses in my lifetime? When did Moses play, Mike? Wait, when did he stop playing?
Moses stopped playing. He probably played up through the late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, well, he's not. I don't see Tim Moses Duncan. On him. Tim Duncan is number three.
Shaq?
He's number four. Good job, Mike.
All right.
Rounding out the top 10, Wes Unseld is number eight. Robert Parrish is number nine. Elgin Baylor is number 10. And a guy who I wouldn't think about rebounding is number 11, Larry Bird, Mike.
I was kind of going to go to the Celtics guys at some point, just because the thought process obviously is right. Who played in a lot of playoff games? I mean, that's basically what it comes down to is, did you play in a lot of playoff games? Now, clearly, all the guys on that list are all-time great players. So you combine all-time great players with guys who played a lot in the playoffs. Typically, those two sets interact, correct? In your Venn diagram of the top playoff performers, you usually have all-time greats combined with guys who play in a lot of playoffs. So,
yeah. All right, so
I got the top set. I got the top seven. That's not bad.
Not bad. All right, so we're going to now turn our attention to the Eastern Conference semifinal matchup between the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. Do you hear dejection in my voice? I am dejected, Mike. But I don't know. I think we kind of talked before we started recording that we were going to like spend a lot of time on the Cavs here because at this point they're irrelevant. It's been 5 days since they lost, but like, or 6 days, right? Because they played on Wednesday last week when they lost. Was that Wednesday
last
week?
Sounds right. Sounds right.
Yeah, just a disappointment. Like, I don't know. I mean, any chance, like if they would have won, like, I would feel really good. Now, obviously, we don't know that Butler gets hurt in game one against the Cavs and all that. And, I mean, but, like, this is just a disappointing moment in Cavs because we both expected them to win that series, and they just looked like they were outclassed, they were outcoached. They just didn't look like they wanted it. And, you know, Jared Allen's quote of the big lights were too big for me, blah, blah, blah. Dude, you've been in two playoff series already in your career, and you were solid in both those. I don't know, maybe it was the level of expectations. I don't know. But, I mean, kudos to the Knicks. They came out. They wanted it. And the same thing for tonight. Now, once again, the Heat are continuing to impress me because, I mean, tonight they played without Butler. Butler obviously was fantastic in game one. And they came out and they hung in the game without Butler. I don't know. So that's where my headspace is. Like, I'm disappointed the Cavs lost. Miami would have been a tough out, I guess, because they're just playing. It's that Heat culture thing. And the Knicks just wanted it more. That's my thought. And who knows where this series is going to go. Is Jimmy Butler back for the next game? Julius Randle looked pretty solid tonight. Brunson was terrible in the first half and then woke up in the second half. I don't know where this series goes. What do you think, Mike?
Toughness, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference between the Cavs and these two teams, toughness. And I guess I come out of the Cavs series with the Knicks with questions that I didn't have about this team 3 weeks ago. And it made you think about the way this roster is constructed and what it can be or can't be moving forward. So my number one question is what I just said, toughness. Does this team, do these particular guys, it just felt like in so many ways that they just kind of rolled over and they didn't fight back and they weren't up to the moment. And as you said, the Jared Allen quote was kind of disturbing. I mean, maybe that's true, but
he's
kind of disturbing.
He's played in two play series already. Like,
it just doesn't make sense. I mean, that's something that even if you feel that way, I'm not sure what the benefit is to saying that out loud, but they just didn't fight. And that's disappointing. When I look at the Knicks and when I look at Miami, I see two teams that are scrapping and clawing, and clearly Miami was not afraid to go into Madison Square Garden the way the Cavs were. I mean, the Cavs were basically non-competitive in those two games, and Miami has not showed that in any way, shape, or form. So the number one question I have about the Cavs is the big four guys' toughness. Are those guys tough enough to be able to get it done? So that's number one. Number two, can you survive at a championship level with 2 6-foot to 6'3" guards in your backcourt? Can you have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland together playing 40 minutes a game in playoff games and survive defensively? Can you make that work? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm a lot less sure about it than I was 2 or 3 weeks ago. Okay. Mobley, right? Mobley has to get better offensively. Has to get better offensively. Has to either be able to shoot or has to be able to put the floor on ball on the floor and be an impact offensive player. There's no way, and we said it at the beginning of the season, that there's no way that this team is ever going to get to where they want to go unless Evan Mobley is your best player. And clearly in this series, he was nowhere near your best player. He was nowhere near, he might have been the 7th or 8th most impactful player in this Knicks-Cavs series. So Mobley's got a long way to go, at least from a playoff standpoint, what he showed in those 5 games, that he's still a long way away from being a guy that you can count on offensively to do what needs to be done. And again, he's 21 years old. Next year will be his 3rd year. You'd expect he's going to take a leap, but I didn't like what I saw in the playoffs. Let's put it that way. Next, Jared Allen. is Jared Allen a guy that, I mean, look, Mitchell Robinson is a good player at what he does, but for him to just completely manhandle Jared Allen at every turn, and the way the Knicks just completely destroyed the Cavs on the boards, especially Mitchell Robinson on the offensive glass, I mean, that was just completely ridiculous. And so now you have to look at it and you say, all right, do we really want to pay Jared Allen? What does he have? I think he has 2 more years left on his contract.
Oh, he signed a five-year, $100 million contract.
Right. I feel like he has two or three years left on that contract.
3 more years.
Okay, so 3 years at $20 million. Would you rather have Isaiah Hartenstein for whatever he's making, which is significantly less than $20 million? Could you find a guy, a scrap heap guy, that could do what Jared Allen, at least what Jared Allen did in the playoffs? Now, I know Jared Allen's been a key part of the Cavs defense. And look, the Cavs defense was number one throughout the regular season. But I think what this pointed out, as has been said numerous times.
I don't think our
defense
is what cost us this game, these games.
No,
though,
I
right?
don't either. I don't either. I don't either. But what is Jared Allen giving you in the playoffs on offense? What does he give you? He doesn't really post up, right? You're not dumping the ball into him to score. He can't shoot. Yeah, he rolls the rim and he's got a nice touch, I guess, around the basket finishing, but what does he bring to you? What does he bring to the table offensively? I don't know. And in the regular season, fine. But in the playoffs, a lot of these holes were exposed. So I now have questions. 3 weeks ago, I did not question at all whether Jared Allen would be on this roster for the duration of his contract. Now I have to think about, does he make sense and is he a good fit? And are they going to keep him? Like, because if you look at what their roster is right now, they really don't have many moves. LeVert's a free agent, but if you don't sign LeVert, you basically lose that salary slot because the Cavs are right up against the cap. And so they almost have to re-sign LeVert just so they have him as a tradable contract. And I'm not sure what the market is for Caris LeVert. Like, what are you getting back for him that's better than what Caris LeVert is? I don't think much, right? I mean, there's not much out there. You're going to get another flawed player maybe at a different position. But theoretically, Caris LeVert is kind of the guy that the Cavs need, right? When you talk about
a
bigger
guard,
what's
one of
game
two,
Mike? A little bit.
I mean, that Caris LeVert one of them helped win them game two, right? I mean,
the problem is you only get one game out of every two, maybe three, where you get the good version of LeVert. And when you don't get the good version of LeVert, he's totally frustrating to watch because of the dribble, and then
the drunk dribbling,
you never know
as I
what
call
he's going to do with the ball. So, yeah. So, look, I think that when you start talking about who the Cavs have that might have value, Jared Allen is the guy that might have value that could bring you something different if you want to change around this roster. So toughness, Garland and Mitchell as a backcourt. I like both of those guys individually, but can they play together? And then is Jared Allen going to be on this roster? And what is Evan Mobley going to be? And he needs to be better in the playoffs. And then I think the final piece that you have a question about, and I think this was something that people have talked about, JB Bickerstaff, is he
Altman's
the guy
already
for this
said he's
job?
Not firing
is he the guy
himself?
Long-term? Right. I mean, I think he's going to be back, but I'm not 100% sure that there was a lot of good things that JB can point to in this particular series that really stood out. So you go into this offseason for the Cavs with way more question marks than you would have. And I think you have to, as you said, be super disappointed in the fact that, A, you lose to the Knicks, and then, B, Miami beats Milwaukee, which opens up a path for you to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, look, Miami is good, and they're playing well, and Butler is obviously a proven playoff guy and whatever. But the fact of the matter is that Miami was a 7 seed. And the Cavs are a 4. And heading into the playoffs, I think if you and I had found out that, hey, after the first round series against the Knicks, the Cavs are going to have an opportunity to play the Miami Heat, I think both of us would have said, well, there's a heck of a chance for us to be in the conference finals. Where now you look at it and you say, oh, I don't know. But that's only looking at it in retrospect after the Cavs completely fall apart against the Knicks. So it's a disappointment on so many levels. And I think it makes me question who and what this team is. And that makes me nervous moving forward. I still like the team. I like our team, but I told you before in a conversation that it gave me some vibes of the Mark Price, Brad Doherty, Larry Nance Cavs, where you got some talented guys, but when the other teams kind of stepped up and took it to another level and took that physicality to another level, that team just never could reach beyond what they had. I think they were giving it everything they had in the regular season, and they just couldn't step up that level in intensity. And that was the vibe. The team I got in this series was that the Cavs didn't have another analogy to this, Mike.
And I haven't heard anyone else talk about this. Is the Wizards of the original LeBron era? This middling team that always played well in the regular season was always like the 4, 5, 6 seed. Always just there, right? And then they just stunk against – I know it was LeBron adjacent, okay? But, right, like, Gilbert Arenas was a good player before he got in trouble. That whole team was a bunch of solid players.
Gilbert Arenas was awesome.
Like,
I mean,
like,
far
do
as
you see the analogy there? Is that fair? Like, I think probably Mitchell's better than Gilbert Arenas ever was. I think
Pete Gilbert Arenas is probably pretty close to Donovan Mitchell. I think Mitchell's probably better, but the peak of Gilbert Arenas is pretty high.
I mean, Antoine was
as a scorer.
I mean, I don't want to say that Mobley's ceiling is way higher than Antoine Jameson, but probably peak Antoine. And Mobley would
– I get what you're saying. I mean, I get what you're saying. I think there's something to be said for that comparison. I think if you're Donovan Mitchell, you're a little disappointed that you're being compared
Agent
to
Zero.
Gilbert Arenas, who never really accomplished much in the postseason.
Bring a gun to the locker rooms.
He did. But you just have to – if you're – I mean, at this point, look, Mitchell had the duels with Jamal Murray. But now he's flamed out in the last two playoffs, and really in this series, he was bad. I mean, he was nowhere near the guy that they needed him to be in order for the Cavs to be able to win that series. So, yeah, it was disappointing. Disappointing series and leaves us with way more questions about this team than we had 3 weeks ago. There's just no question about that.
All right, so your take – like, okay, so I guess we've covered both the Knicks and the Heat in that conversation. Mike, who do you pick? Who do you got? Who are you taking? You got to take the Knicks, right?
No.
Even with Butler's ankle the size of a baseball?
Butler's gonna be back, man. He's not going to sit out. He's going to be back. Look, Miami hung with them tonight and probably should have won. Probably should have won this game. Kind of fell apart and lost Brunson a couple times. And also they were the victim of some egregious officiating.
Well, Scott Foster,
right? Well, okay, so let's break down the couple calls that were just horrible. One, the 4-point play where Brunson is shooting it in the corner, and I forget who even ran over Hartenstein. Maybe it was Bam. I can't even remember.
Wasn't it Strus?
It wasn't even close. Brunson wasn't. Whoever it wasn't even close. Brunson wasn't even close to raising up for that shot. I mean, the ball was down by his knees as Hartenstein's getting plowed over. And for them to count that, okay, I don't understand. This is another example of, and look, nobody can accuse us of being a homer in this case, because previously we were talking about like the DeJounte Murray, Evan Mobley play or the Mobley, Joel Embiid play. Like, that's a play where when they decide to review that, like I can't even imagine in a million years what they're looking at that they see that would indicate to them that that shot goes in. Like, there's just that shot should count. I mean, clearly, it's not even close. The contact was way before Brunson was even into his shooting motion. So for them to count that after looking at it on replay, I mean, I have no idea. And then the other play was the shot clock violation where the ball clearly hit the rim. I mean, it wasn't even – again,
I'll be honest, though,
Mike,
when I was watching it live, though, I didn't think it hit the rim. And I know I'm a million miles away.
But you're also watching it on TV. Right. You're also watching it on TV from one angle where they have three officials there that are watching that play. somebody's got to see that that ball hits the rim. I mean, that's a huge play because that's 2 points for the Knicks, or sorry, 2 points for the Heat right there. I mean, it's an uncontested layup that goes in the basket. And I mean, those calls were just, I mean, those were ridiculous, ridiculous. And I guess from Miami's perspective, right, you play this game and
you were playing with house money a little bit.
You don't
today,
have Jimmy Butler.
Right?
A little bit, but I mean, again, you want to win those games. Like, that was a winnable game for the Heat. I mean, if you're the Heat, you got to sit in your locker room and kick yourself and think, hey, we could have won that game. And if you go up 2-0 with two road victories,
it's looking pretty good. Yeah,
now
yeah,
you're
yeah.
sitting really pretty. I mean, you're already still looking fairly good with, you know, 1-1, depending on Jimmy's health. But I just think when I watch the Knicks, I said it in the Cavs series, to me, Brunson is just, I expect every time that he raises up for a shot, it feels like it's going in. At least it has in the playoffs to this point. On the other hand, I watch Julius Randle. He's fast rising up my list of players that are just unwatchable. Like, he just catches the ball and he's dribbling. He doesn't zip the ball around the perimeter. Like, he always is a catch and just holds it, and takes bad shots. Is off balance, is just trying to knock people over. He just, I do not enjoy watching Julius Randle play basketball.
He's a throwback player, isn't he?
I don't know. He shoots a lot of terrible threes. So in that case, he's not really a throwback player. I don't know. I just don't like guys who are ball stoppers.
It's Larry Johnson. Was he a ball stopper did he move around a lot? Because I seem to recall watching him play, maybe it was in his later days as Charlotte, that he was just a ball stopper.
Yeah, I mean, different era. Early Larry Johnson, before he had his back problems, was just an incredible
athlete. I just remember him standing at the...
A much better player than Julius Randle. End of career, Larry Johnson may have resembled more of
and
how Randle plays
to
today.
What,
but
that was like, not, career, that was like 90, his end of career was like 95, 96, and I was 10. So that probably... is why, what I'm thinking of. At least I think that's when the end of his career was. Maybe I'm wrong in that statement, but I'm not an encyclopedia of Larry Johnson stats, Mike.
Okay. All right. Well, I understand. I don't think I am either. And then RJ Barrett,
he was great
same.
In the first quarter tonight. I mean, he was
same type of player. He's played better in the playoffs, I think, than what people kind of thought that he was going to. I mean, he's been productive, but he still is a guy who – the ball gets to him and it stops. He's not a great shooter, but he shoots a lot. I'm not sure what he really does well. I don't like watching either of those guys, to be honest. Not Randle and Barrett are in the playoffs. They're two of my least favorite guys to watch. And on the other hand, Brunson, I didn't like watching him against the Cavs because I felt like he was going to score every time he had the ball. But now when you watch him in this series where I'm much more agnostic about who I care is going to win this game.
Can we agree that whoever wins the series is not going to the finals? Are you willing to state that or no?
I don't think so. I don't think you can go that far. I don't think you can go that far. We'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, I just think Brunson has been tremendous. And yet I watch him and I'm not 100% sure that he's so small. It just feels like, how come guys can't stay in front of him and put a guy with length on him that is going to bother him? And it just doesn't seem
you could say the same thing about Allen Iverson back in the day. Like, he was so small and he was still getting to the basket and scoring. But
Iverson was Iverson was a world class athlete in terms of quickness and speed. And he just had, I mean, you're talking about a totally different type of athlete. Jalen Brunson is nowhere near the athlete that Iverson is. I mean, that they're not even close. Now Brunson is maybe stronger, right? But Iverson was just on a whole nother level athletically from where Brunson is. But I just expect every time he shoots, I expect it to go in just based on how he's playing. He looks just super confident and the Knicks are feeding off him. I still like Miami in the series. I think if Butler comes back, I still think Miami's the better team. And then you look at the next series, and we can talk about that game.
I think the Knicks win the series, Mike. I don't know why, but the NBA is somehow going to make it happen.
All right, I'm going to take Miami. I'm going to take Miami in six. I think you're
going
to get
this is going seven, Mike.
I think you have three more three more Jimmy games. Well, okay, even if it goes seven, you got five games left. Jimmy only has to show up for 60% of them. Playoff Jimmy's only got to be okay. there for 60% of them. So
let's move to the other series. And I didn't – this wasn't going to be a tagline that I expected to say, but let James Harden cook, Mike. Let him cook. Dropped 45 last night. Vintage Houston Rockets James Harden, the one that we love to hate, jacking up threes. He made a lot of mid-range, finished at the basket. I believe he only shot four free throws yesterday, scored 45 points. Just an amazing game. We both knew that he was going to just show out last night. We just knew it. We were texting 5 hours before the game. We knew he was going to score 45 points. That's not really true. But listen, I think your text message of him being – what was the statement you made to me? First ballot Hall of Famer in the first round, first game of a series or something along those lines. Like, I don't exactly remember what you –
What did I say exactly? Let's quote it exactly.
You said
charter member of the game one all stars.
But here's what.
Look, Harden was phenomenal. Boston he was unbelievable
Boston's
that game.
I mean, that's as well. Lost that game.
There were so many dumb plays down the stretch of that game, and they also missed so many open shots. They had a couple possessions there where they had multiple offensive rebounds and missed wide open shots. I think they eventually scored. There was two possessions where they had multiple offensive rebounds. One, they ended up not scoring. The other one, they ended up, I think, scoring and got a two-pointer. I think Horford maybe got a layup off of it. But Harden was tremendous. Look, I'm not his biggest fan, as is well known here on the podcast, but what he did last night was incredible. He played really, really, really well. And knocking down that step back three with 8 seconds to go and being able to get to the rim, as you said, without the benefit of going to the line 18 or 20 times, he was really good. And I think if you look at Philly, look, you talked about can the Heat or the Knicks, do I think that they're going to automatically lose in that next round? Do you have any faith that Embiid is going to be 100% for the rest of the playoffs? Okay. So, do you think that the James Harden-led Sixers are unbeatable against the Knicks or Heat? Okay. Do you think Boston is really locked in and playing super well? Do you think Boston even is going to beat Philly?
I'm kind of hoping they don't, because I want to hear the Bill Simmons meltdown, Mike. I want to hear them Bill Simmons meltdown, because after the Bruins, that's a sport called hockey, Mike. I don't know if you know it. They skate around on the ice.
Sticks?
They hit this little puck
sticks?
Into the goal.
Ice. Okay.
I don't know the rules that well, actually, but the Bruins had
Wayne Gretzky.
Like a historical season, and then they lost in the first round of the playoffs. That's all I know. I don't exactly know what a historical season in hockey is, to be honest with you.
Bobby Orr.
He's retired, Mike. He might be dead. I think
he's retired. He played for the Bruins,
I think
though,
so.
Right?
I literally
pretty sure
you could ask me. There's a whole lot of sports that you could ask me about. Hockey is not one of them. I've seen the Lumberjacks play a few times. I know he played for the Penguins.
Gretzky,
Sidney Crosby. You know that name? That's a current
Rocket Richard.
What was his name? What was
Messier?
Who was
Eric Lindros? Brett Hull.
That's the one. No, who's the Gordon Bombay? Gordon Bombay.
Who?
Emilio Estevez's character in the Mighty Ducks.
Okay. Gordon Bombay. That sounds like a ride at Disney World that you just went on. You took the kids on the Gordon Bombay.
It was owned by Disney. The Mighty Ducks were owned by Disney. No, the Mighty Ducks were owned by Disney.
There you go. That's true.
You didn't know that?
There you go.
Okay.
I knew that, I guess.
Okay, I want to hear some.
That's our hockey talk for
the year.
This is our first hockey talk on the podcast ever. I like it.
Probably. I don't think that we've ever talked hockey before, Mike. There's probably a good reason for that.
Is. Yep.
This is going to be our headliner clip, Mike. Us talking hockey for the podcast.
Let's do it.
Anyways.
Let's do it. I like it.
I want to hear Simmons' meltdown. That was how we all got on the hockey talk. I want to hear the Simmons' meltdown when the Celtics lose the Sixers with, at best, 60% Embiid, which I'm not – I mean, if I'm Philly, okay, and they just beat him without him, what's stopping me from resting him for another game, giving him another day? Like they said
– Oh, I don't think he's gonna play in game two. I'd be surprised. On the other hand, if he's as healthy as he's going to get, if you play him and you win game two, you're pretty much clinching the series if you win two games on the road. So it all comes down to, look, if he's medically ready to play, however you want to define that, then I wouldn't sit him an extra game just because, hey, we can get him a little bit more rest.
Okay, that's fair.
Who are you rooting for?
The Sixers. I picked the Sixers, yeah, me too. Mike. I picked the Sixers and you laughed at me. Just putting it out there. Last week, play it back.
It's fine.
Play it back. This is if we had time and we had the editing capabilities and if I had pulled the sound clip intelligently, I would say when I picked the Sixers, you laughed at me and said, "You're putting a lot of eggs in the Harden and Embiid basket." And I said, "I'm picking them. I'm rooting for them. Because I don't want the Celtics to be there again." Like, if.
Yeah, I don't want the Celtics to be there either.
Honestly, Mike, the only reason to root for the Celtics is if you're rooting for the Lakers.
You want Celtics Lakers?
Because I think that, like, a nostalgia trip. Like, really, that's legitimately the only reason that a casual basketball fan is rooting for the Celtics, right? I mean.
I guess. I mean, let's put it this way. If the Lakers make it, there's pretty much a good storyline no matter which East team makes it, right? Lakers-Boston, Lakers-Philly, there's historical precedent there. Lakers-Knicks, LA, Lakers, New York, Lakers-Heat. You got LeBron against Miami. All four of those are compelling storylines. Let's put it this way. The NBA is severely hoping that the Lakers make it to the NBA Finals. Let's put it that way. They're not rooting for the Denver Nuggets, I can tell you that.
As evidenced by someone didn't even give Jokic a top five vote tonight, this season, Mike. Anyways, are we done with this series, the Boston series for now? Are we good with it? Anything you?
I don't know. What do you think? You still think Philly's going to win?
I'm sticking with Philly. After what I watched last night, the collapse. I don't. This is further cementing in my brain that I don't know that Mazzulla is a good coach. He doesn't make adjustments very well. He doesn't seem to have, like, he's got a little bit of a Bickerstaff effect in him in the adjustment category. They've lost a lot of games in these playoffs, and I know they obviously got out of the first round, but I feel like they've lost four games or three games now in the playoffs, and I believe all three of them were late game collapses, except for the one Hawks game that. Hawks were in the lead the whole game, but they should have, at this point, they should have only had one loss to their name, because I still think they should have won that game yesterday. So I'm going to say I don't think Mazzulla's a good coach. I think Doc Rivers is a good enough coach. I mean, we could, of the coaches left, Mike, you know, all eight coaches.
Coaches draft. Okay? Is that what you're doing?
So we got Spoelstra, we got Rivers, we got Mazzulla, and we got Tibbs in the East. And in the West, we've got Darvin Ham, we've got Michael Malone, we've got Steve Kerr, and we've got, who am I missing? What's his name? Monty Williams. Okay, I'm probably taking. It's close between Kerr and Spoelstra, right?
Yeah, I think you got to take Spoelstra.
Probably, because he's done more with less than Kerr has done. Then you got to take Kerr, and then you got to take Rivers.
I would say, yeah, Kerr.
I mean, so Rivers is the third best coach left, right?
Maybe Tibbs.
No, Tibbs has never won anything. He's injured players by playing them too much.
Who's at the bottom?
Mazzulla.
Missoula and Darvin Ham, right?
Yeah, that'd but Darvin Ham in his first year won a playoff series. I mean, I know you do have two great players.
But I'm just saying, if you're picking guys, I think you'd probably put those two guys at the bottom of the list.
Wasn't Darvin Ham on the Toronto Raptors championship coaching team, too? Is that accurate?
No, he was on the Bucks.
So he's been around a championship. Like,
yeah. I just think those two guys are probably last.
He probably saw Budenholzer frying an egg on his head and said, I need to get out of here. So ran the other way. Took the Lakers up. Anyways, okay.
That's it. All right, I'm taking Boston. I just think that I still don't trust the Sixers. Yeah, Harden had 45. He's not going to repeat that performance three more times. And Embiid's just not healthy. I mean, even if he comes back, he's not going to be at full strength whenever he comes back. And if it's not one thing, it's another with this guy. So I think Boston, despite my misgivings about the Celtics, Coach Mazzulla, and where do you stand on Tatum?
Ugh, that's where I stand.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out on him being a top five player in the league.
Yep, I agree. All right, so the last series we're going to talk about, the Western Conference between the Suns and the Nuggets. Nuggets up 2-0. If Chris Paul doesn't come back, the series is over, right, Mike?
Absolutely. There's no chance. Phoenix has no chance if Chris Paul's out. Here's
the other thing. He comes back. There's no way he can play as many minutes as he's been playing at his age and his injury.
Can KD and Booker play 56 minutes in a 48-minute game? Is that possible?
I don't know. I just don't see – I don't see it happening for the Suns. I think the Suns will win a game, but I just don't see – they're actually favored tomorrow night, Mike. I know they're in Phoenix, but I just don't see it.
Denver's looked the best of any team in the playoffs. Well,
I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, they lose one or two games against Minnesota. One.
They lost one, but that was the game where they came back from 12 down in the last 2 minutes. And if Jokic goes 2 for 2 from the line, they probably win that game. Instead, he goes 1 for 2.
So you're right. I mean, I guess theoretically you're right.
Nobody thought they were going to win a game like they did last night, right? A defensive game that they didn't really play all that great offensively. Murray, I think, was 3 for 15 terrible. And 1 of 9 from 3.
He was 0 for 9. Yeah, he was terrible. Like, he was 0 for 9.
Okay. And Jokic was phenomenal. I know he only had five assists.
Aaron Gordon.
Who?
In the first half.
Gordon's been really good.
Like, who would have thought that, like, he's been the role that Michael Porter Jr. would be in this playoffs, right? Like, the third guy. I feel like he's been the third best player.
Yeah, I mean, he's provided, I think, more scoring than you probably would have thought. And Gordon's been really good defensively, making KD work. The other guy that I think is really – I mean, the two Browns off the bench, Bruce Brown and Christian Brown. Christian Brown played really well yesterday. I thought Durant was kind of bouncing into him.
Yesterday, I don't know that I could have picked Christian Brown out of a lineup.
You don't remember from the Kansas championship run last year?
No.
Not this season, but the previous season. I wouldn't be able to have picked him out of a lineup. Yeah, I understand. Look, I get it. But he's played really well. He has played really well. He's been an important guy off their bench. And Denver, the one thing I will say compared to a lot of these teams is Denver is getting good production from these guys off their bench. And that just makes a huge difference when you start talking about what these teams get. I mean, especially Phoenix. Phoenix is getting nothing from their bench, nothing. And the fact that you're having to play Booker and Durant 45 minutes apiece in a game that you lose, man. And Chris Paul, come on. Like, we talked about Embiid's injuries. Chris Paul's injury, you might as well mark that on the calendar for next year.
Does he have State Farm insurance for his injuries? Where's Cliff Paul?
I hope so, man. I hope so. Phoenix should have it. Phoenix should have insurance on whether or not he can play ever in these games. I mean, obviously disappointing for Chris Paul and obviously disappointing for Phoenix, but they're just not good enough. I mean, even with him, I don't think they're good enough to beat Denver.
Denver in five, Mike?
Well, Denver's done.
Is Denver in five? It's not a
– Yeah, I think so. I think Phoenix maybe gets one.
So I just don't
– I wouldn't be stunned. I honestly wouldn't be stunned if it was a sweep. I wouldn't be stunned because I think that Denver – to me, I look at what Denver does, and I think that, like – I don't think they're going to be afraid on the road. I don't think Jokic is going to perform any different in Phoenix than he does in Denver. I think you're going to get his A game no matter where you go. And again, I like KCP hit so many big shots yesterday that when you think about their, again, Denver's bench, Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, and then our buddy Uncle Jeff Green, those three guys off the bench.
Uncle Jeff
Green
needs to calm down though, because I know he took a fall yesterday. I was concerned about him. I was concerned because he tried jumping really, really high and kind of landed on his butt. And
he had a nice dunk yesterday. He's known for getting some good dunks over top of people at his advanced age. But those three guys are just compared to most of these teams that we're seeing in the playoffs. What is advanced age? That's right. So anyway, I just think Denver, what they bring to the table and what they've been able to do defensively. Look, Durant's probably not going to shoot 10 for 27 again. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at what Boston did to Durant last year when he was in Brooklyn, and he didn't play very well in that series. And now you look at what Denver's done to him in these first two games, kind of put physical guys on him that are bumping him. You think about Aaron Gordon, how physical he is, and Christian Brown's been really physical with him as well. I mean, I don't know if that's going to change. I mean, they can keep bumping Durant and try to get him off his spots and make him work to be able to score. And if he's playing 45 minutes a game, it's just – that's not sustainable. And Denver has – a good bench, and if they get Jamal Murray, the good Jamal Murray, I think they're going to be really hard to beat because Jokic is going to put up his numbers. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And Denver just has more guys that, from a secondary scoring, standpoint, those guys can score. They got more guys that can possibly jump up and score 15 to 20 points for them versus Phoenix has really nothing beyond. There are four guys. Kind of, they're in almost the same situation as the Cavs. I mean, I guess those guys that Phoenix's guys probably have a better pedigree than the Cavs guys, but it's a very similar team in that they're super top heavy. And you just, night to night, you just have no idea if you're going to get anything. And more than likely, you're going to get nothing from your bench if you're Phoenix. And that's the same thing the Cavs were looking at. It's hard to win that way.
Right. Anything else, Mike?
I think Denver wins that series in five.
Denver in five.
So you have your Eastern Conference Finals as
Knicks Sixers.
All right. So you and I are diametrically opposed in the East because I have Heat Celtics. And then in the West, Denver and a little too early to tell.
Yeah, so
by the Lakers Warriors.
Behind the scenes, we're recording this part while the Lakers Warriors game's going on, and it's about to be a 1-point game at halftime, Mike. So we're gonna, obviously, if you've listened to this whole podcast, you've already heard us talk about the Lakers Warriors. But as we're recording it, it's about to be halftime. AD is having a great game, but we'll have to see what happens in the second half. But if I had to make a pick right now, Mike, I'm doing it. It's the Lakers. They're going to walk away with this series. We'll see. We'll see if I change my tune by the end of the end of the game. But everything
By the end of the night. By the end of the night. The beginning of the podcast
makes a lot of sense. But we'll see. We'll see, Mike.
It does.
All right. We'll want to leave it there.
All right. I think I'm going to go. Give me the Warriors. Let's just go diametrically opposed in every series except for the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are going to win the NBA title. I think the Nuggets are the best team left.
That's not what the NBA wants.
I know, but I'm telling you, I think Denver's the best team. I think what they have offensively, and then if they can get just enough defensively, which is what they're getting now, I think they have guys that, you know, Jokic is where he is defensively. Clearly, he's not the rim protector that some other big centers and other guys can be. But I think the rest of their roster, when you start looking at what they can throw out there with Aaron Gordon and Bruce Brown and Christian Brown and KCP is a good defender, they have enough guys, I think, that can play defense. And so they can kind of balance between an offensive lineup and a defensive lineup. And when Jokic is out there, he makes everybody good offensively.
What makes a better series for the Western Conference Final? Nuggets Lakers or Nuggets Warriors? Which is a better series to watch? I think it's got to be the Lakers, because I think Anthony Davis can attempt to guard Jokic. I don't think anyone on the Warriors can guard Jokic. Like, I don't think anyone's close to being able to guard him. I think that series is a runaway.
Yeah.
For the Nuggets. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Anytime you start talking about superstar players, you like to say, well, who's going to guard Steph, or who's going to guard LeBron, or who's going to guard Jokic? And the answer is nobody, right?
Yeah, Those guys are going to do what they do. But I'm saying, I think Anthony Davis could slow him down a little bit. I think he could do something. I think Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. can slow LeBron down a little bit. Like, I just think that's a more interesting series to me than Nuggets Warriors, but that's just me.
I think on the other side of the ball, I think the Warriors probably pose more challenges for the Nuggets defense than the Lakers pose for the Nuggets defense. I think the Nuggets probably match up better with the Lakers offense, whereas I think chasing around all the movement in Golden State, I think that's maybe a little bit tougher for Jokic to be involved in that. So there would definitely be interesting storylines and different X and O stuff that would be interesting to look at in that series when you start thinking about who guards who. And clearly, Jokic, they've made an adjustment in this series where Jokic is coming up to the level of the screen and isn't dropping back as much as he did in the regular season. But still, with Jokic in there, you're limited in what you can do. And obviously, against Golden State, you better figure out a way to get the ball out of Steph's hands. And even if you got to face the Draymond 4-on-3 coming out of the screen, you're better off doing that than letting Curry rain fire from outside the 3-point line. So you're not going to win. There's no winning formula there. You just have to, I guess, tack and find the lesser of the evils in terms of how you're going to do it. So either one of those series, I think, would be compelling. So anyway,
thanks for listening tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.